Welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course, on our podcast. I'm AD Packham, and we are massaging your oral canal in association with OldFootballShirts.com. Well, last Saturday, we went to Anfield, and we were unlucky to come away with nothing as we had the runaway leaders on the ropes. It was suggested that if we could play like our Arsenal on Thursday, then we'd have a great chance to get our first win at one of the so-called top six. So we did. Hey! Yeah. Tomorrow we have the chance to follow up our brilliant performance at the Emirates with Wolves, our visitors at the Amex. Can we add another 3 points to the total is the question. Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares, and we are delighted to welcome back Andy Bass. Hello, Andy. How are you feeling?
Oh, I'm feeling very good.
Are you feeling very chipper after our Thursday night in London?
I certainly am. It was a splendid evening.
Glad you went. Did you go in the end, AD? You were
no,
un-an-iring.
I didn't. I never made it in the end. I was one of the... I was primed for it.
What does that... I don't want to know. Don't tell me.
It's quite obvious, really.
Yeah. You were ready to go and didn't.
It was streamed via a popular delivery outlet.
Oh, that
outlet.
Primed. Yes, okay, right. Absolutely. Okay.
But
that's absolutely amazing.
You were wearing a dicky bow.
I was
looking very. I was going to say suave then.
No, well, save with a U. No, it's just part of my work. I worked at the Sussex Business Awards, put it on. Very good. It just meant that Martin Perry wasn't at the Emirates either, which was quite amusing, but we spent our time just sort of catching up on the results as they were coming in. I think that when it got to quarter past 10 or quarter past 11, whatever time that game finished, they got to realise actually we probably would have preferred to have gone, but it was most enjoyable. And it's better still that my boss, who is a gooner, his face was rubbed in it, and again, and again.
But just before we start, Al...
Yes, got to say, we mentioned it last week. We said our final goodbyes to Albion. And bearing in mind, I do actually consider all... If you're good enough, if you're deemed by the club to wear the stripes, to wear the badge and represent the club, all those things, therefore, are equal for me. So the Brighton and Hove Albion's all-time leading goal scorer. We said our final goodbyes to Lewis Hammonds. And I do have to say this, and it was obviously a very moving day. The one thing that the club did do for him, and it hasn't been put out there, but the family have said it's okay for me to say this, is that the hearse was before the crematorium, was there at the back of the West Stand for... As they called it, one last time for Lewis to have a look at the stadium before his final resting. And as the hearse and the funeral car behind it was driven around slowly, just as they got to behind the north stand, there was an entourage of about 100 staff and first team players just to say their final goodbyes.
Oh, nice.
Very, very moving. It was incredible. When Lewis's uncle Steve told me about this, choked me up. It was absolutely brilliant. And okay, I'm sure other clubs would do this sort of thing, but how wonderful is that the club would do that for one of their own? It's brilliant. So yeah, may your sweet soul rest in peace, Lewis, and thank you for all the smiles that you brought to everyone.
Absolutely. Okay, well, let's move on to last Saturday. And actually, just before we do talk, we do have a competition for you this week, so stay tuned for that. We'll be giving you the full details.
Yeah, don't switch off. Please don't.
But first, let's talk about last Saturday at Liverpool, Andy.
Did you go?
No, I did not go. This is a game I've only watched on the extended highlights.
Okay, fine.
But yeah, I mean, very, very impressed from what I saw. It's just, it's weird to say, very frustrating that we came away with nothing. It's funny, I was speaking to our good friend Kieran at the Arsenal match, and he did go to the game, and he said it was really bizarre sort of leaving Anfield feeling they were slightly robbed, really.
Well, yeah, I mean, there was a couple of... maybe contentious moments in the game as well, which we're obviously going to touch on. We're not going to talk about.
You're not going to let anything go, are you?
This is just frustrating. I mean, just firstly, the team news was Dunk was obviously straight back in place of Duffy, and there was a return for Gross in place of Trossard, and a first start this season for the Croc Sully March for Yves Bissouma, and Aaron Connolly came back in place of Neil Maupay. Now it was. nervy start from us.
I can't help feeling the players looked a little bit overawed. I mean, they're at Anfield. Liverpool have probably got their best chance of winning the league for, what was it, 30 years now. This is their best chance. For me, they carry on the way they're going. They're champions elect. And yeah, the first 20, 25 minutes, 30 minutes, we looked overawed. We didn't. Our passing wasn't as crisp as it. Well, not just as much as it could be, as it needs to be, especially at somewhere like that. Now, admittedly, they played. I thought Liverpool also did look a bit leg weary. I think they played on the Wednesday, but it's frustrating that, you know, as Andy's making out, we not feel we were robbed, but you know, we played so well, but we have to go 2-0 down to probably, like I say, what might be the champions elect before we actually get going. That's frustrating.
Yeah, but I mean, the first goal, Andy, I mean, I've got slight issues with the fact. I mean, there is.
I have issues with that as well. There is a number of issues with that first goal.
Go on then.
Okay, well, go on. Well, tell me what your issues are.
Well, probably the same as you. First of all, definite foul on Aaron Connolly, so we should have had a free kick.
Yeah, absolutely. Is it like the top six bias?
Well, yeah, and then that was followed up by Pascal Gross's very good tackle.
Yes, got the ball.
That was not a foul either. And then the third issue was absolutely dire defending from the resulting free kick, which gifted them Van Dijk. So it was a triple whammy of a nightmare goal.
We can give credit to Alexander Arnold's ball, though, because, I mean, that it was largely undefendable. It was just an absolute pizza. Well,
I think it was more defendable than the corner.
Yeah,
the corner I thought was undefendable. I thought that was exquisite, but I think Webster was rooted to the floor.
You got to see. Well, one, there was that, but two, there was the kind of the salmon-like qualities of Van Dijk's leap, and you realise that you actually are dealing with one of the world's, if not the world's, best defender at the moment, and you have to be on your game. You have no room for error.
Okay, yeah. Well, we're going to talk about later on the show. We're going to talk about our defenders of the decade.
Yeah,
in a sliding doors moment. If Virgil van Dijk actually signed for us instead of Celtic, which very nearly actually happened, would he still be at Liverpool now? Where would he be? He certainly wouldn't have gone to Southampton.
Well, yeah.
Who knows? I mean, that is bizarre because we were really close to getting him.
Yeah, I mean, we're back to the Liam Brady at Canvey Island thing, if my granny had balls, that kind of thing. Hey, let's go back to the 1980s. We could have had Ray Houghton. We could have had Frank McAvenny. All right, you know, never mind how he turned out, but Ray Houghton, we could have picked up for £25,000 from Fulham.
We could have had
Lorenzo Pinamonte.
Yes, there is that. So for every...
As Chris Catlin said on our theatre show, we could have had a front line of Dean Saunders and Ian Wright. Imagine that.
Quiet. And Terry Connor as well. So, yeah. But, yeah, if. Yeah.
It was was definitely a foul on Connolly, though, wasn't it? There's no two ways about it.
I can't see why it wasn't called. I have no idea.
And that VAR can't go back that way because he's already given...
It's not that. It's just that is not a VAR-able... No.
Connolly's not the biggest of footballers, and maybe the referee just thought he just got brushed off the ball.
Has he got a reputation already?
No, nope.
I don't know. No, because he does get a lot of free kicks. I mean, he gets kicked a lot because he's really annoying. He's really annoying to defend.
Yeah.
But it was definitely a foul. It looks obvious.
It's a bit like having
me.
Speedy Gonzalez around you a little bit, isn't it?
Okay. But I mean, they did score. The defending was...
Not good enough. Let's just say not good enough. We know there's certain people of this parish who would happily sort of pay for a taxi for them to take them somewhere else. But no, you are dealing with the world's best defender. And I've got to be honest with you. You said that the corner was undefendable. I thought that the leap that I think even if Webster had jumped, I think Van Dijk had got the march on him already. You know. I think he's taller than him anyway.
Possibly.
And it was a perfectly placed header. You know, there was quality about it.
Oh, certainly was quality. I'm not saying it was a terrible goal. I think we could have done more to prevent that goal
even if Webster had leapt, the only thing that probably could have put him off was actually nudging him, and then you risk a penalty.
But I mean, both goals were
Lewis Dunk should have done a lot better for the second
I'm going to give credit to the attacking team here. I mean,
I'm going to disagree with the vehemence of your statement there, because having watched it again, it's just the timing of the ball and the timing of the run that Van Dijk made. I I just think, you know, he knew where that ball was going. Dunk had no idea where it was going. It was too quick. The delivery was too quick. I think Dunk had less of a chance defending that than Webster did the first free kick. But, you know, we're nitpicking here. I mean,
we're talking about perfect deliveries onto the head of the best defender in the world.
Okay, well, we were talking about this game in regards to we came away disappointed that we didn't get anything out of it, but we were still thankful to a string of fine saves from Matt Ryan in this game.
He had another stormer. It's a slightly worrying that he's having a series of them. I mean, he kept the score down to sort of below the Southampton-esque when we played Leicester.
But we are defending differently this year, aren't we, Andy?
Well, we are defending differently, but we're also on a run of playing very good football teams, at least until Thursday night. but even then, so, I mean, Matty still made one brilliant save in particular on Thursday. But we are playing, he is going to be needed to make good saves in those games to keep us in it. But with him keeping us in it, it's nice that we responded to going 2-0 down where we could easily have crumbled or gone back into a shell to try and, like, you know, just restrict the damage. We actually tried to play our way back into the game. And even in that first half, we had two pretty decent opportunities
to score. Let's talk about that then, because, I mean, that is key. And that was, again, key on Thursday night as well, was the fact that we did create some very, very good opportunities. And when those opportunities present themselves, we've really got to start taking them.
Yeah. I mean, we're back to, are our forwards good enough? And again, we sound like we're nitpicking because we're playing very good football. But you notice that the teams who are better are the ones who are finishing.
Yes.
They might not even be playing such attractive football, but they are finishing, and that's the key.
I don't think you can really criticise Morpay and Connolly for not being Vardy, Mane, or, you know, Aguero or Sterling. I mean, they're not at that level. They are, you know, they're at the level, you know, they are, and that's why where we are in the league. But it's good that we are actually creating opportunities. And it's been interesting in the last two games that the midfielders have started to get their shooting boots on. And I guess you're going to talk about Proper's
shot. I am going to talk about
now.
Davey Proper, yeah. But, I mean, I was actually going to talk about the Lewis Dunk miss first, actually.
Oh, okay.
I thought you were going to... I was hoping you were going to skirt
again,
over that.
Again, in sliding doors moments, if he does score that, does it stand? Because, I mean, was Bissouma interfering with play? I mean, we know he was offside and he held his hands up as if he wasn't involved in the play. But knowing how pernickety these people are...
To be honest, that, I think, is literally down to the interpretation of the person making the decision. They're given and they're not given, and it's not a uniform ruling on that. It is literally down to the opinion of the person.
I think he stopped going for it before it got to him, though.
So I think it probably would have been disallowed, but if it would have been allowed, you could definitely have made a good case for it.
Well, absolutely.
We're going to talk about the precedent with the VAR instance anyway when we start talking about the Arsenal game in a second. But I mean, Davey Purper, he certainly is getting forward, and he is actually getting closer and closer to scoring. Is he going to score ever again?
I feel slightly more optimistic because his last two shots have been real stingers and forced the goalkeeper into very good saves.
And it's been fantastic build-up play to get him to that position as well.
He's been a lot more... It's been a lot more of a driving presence in that midfield in recent games. Yeah. You can see he really likes to put a little spurt on. His head's up. He's looking forward. He's slightly more alert in possession than he has been in previous seasons. Maybe that's because the instructions are to do that. But he certainly seems to have a lot more energy about him at the moment.
Well, that's the nature of going forward. It's more his natural game. I mean, it was kind of an unnatural game that Chris Hughton got him to play. And now he is driving forward. Like I say, hopefully he is getting closer and closer. I mean, some of his shooting has been woeful. We're talking into the back. I mean, he belts it and it's into the back of the north stand. So, if he's getting closer and the keeper's been making saves, great. But let's have because his one goal was a bit sort of almost insipid for him, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was. But, okay, well, let's talk about the goal that we did actually score, and that was by Lewis Dunk. This all came about for those, obviously, but most of you will have seen this. So, but Can we just have a little snigger at Alisson on this one?
Oh, then we could have a really large snigger. That was just the most hilarious goal I've seen all season.
What was he thinking?
I'm going to hashtag unpopular opinion. I think he did it deliberately. I mean, not as in...
What, he was
not
as
in
off?
Not as in he... you know, it's not as though it was an unthinking thing. I think he did it deliberately because he saw, right, okay, we've got a definite goal coming up here, so I'm going to turn a definite goal into a probable goal. Because let's face it, what were the chances of any one of our players scoring from the outside of the area? If it was a penalty, then, you know, whatever it is, it's not going to happen. But you really reduce the probabilities of a goal from a free kick outside the area.
I don't buy that for a second. I just think he just lost
his
bearings.
Because if Brighton get back into the game, the fact that Lewis Dunk did score, you know, completely undoes his whole thing. And that's, yes, when you start sniggering. Because what he's trying to do, i.e. blatantly stop a clear goal happening, irrespective of Liverpool fans saying, oh, Lovren would have got back. No, Trossard got a good connection on that.
Yeah, I think it would have gone in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I've no doubt about that. Yeah, it wasn't a. It's an unthinking moment, but I kind of thinking there's an air of deliberacy about it.
Hell of a ball from Webster.
Absolutely. I also love the fact the Liverpool defenders had their arms outstretched as if to say, "What?" You know.
It was
I know you've got to try
it was most mirthful.
Yes.
Okay. So, and the thing was with this, the whistle, you don't often hear it, but it was a really clear whistle.
It was very, very clear.
Yeah. Was Dunk saying, can I take a quick free kick? You can see we're assuming that's the nature of the conversation that's going on. Atkinson blows his whistle. You know, it's the bloke was mucking about on the post. Yeah. We're not there to wait for you.
Klopp's explanation for this was, he said Adrian had cold feet, literally had cold feet.
it gets even funnier.
Yeah, as excuses go, that is, you know, was, textbook yeah. top six manager.
But I mean, it was a great bit of thinking from Lewis there, and it was literally passed into the corner.
Well, there's
it?
No need to belt it. Is
no,
there?
He made sure it went in. He just thought, well, I don't need to take any chances here. I'm literally just going to stroke it into the back of the net.
Well, I was actually more worried that when I saw him standing over it, because I'm thinking, well, this is a perfect one for a bender into the top corner. Excuse the phrase, bender into the top corner. And he is one who just, I mean, he almost toe pokes it, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And if it hits the wall, it's going to take someone's block off.
He does seem to get, he likes his chances at free kicks now, Dunk.
But he tends to toe poke them.
That's what I just said, yeah.
Yeah. It's just really bizarre, but it's a strange technique. Anyway, so Anfield got nervous.
They started booing.
And Liverpool obviously completely lost their minds over this brilliant bit of thinking from Lewis Dunk that they would never do in the million years, apart from the fact they do it every week.
No, it's
fine. It's unfair.
I love the fact, I'd imagine it was music to the Brighton players' ears when they heard booing every time we were attacking. And let's face it, Liverpool then parked the bus for the last 10 minutes. You know, they were down to 10 men. They still had a chance to break out and they still possibly could have put the game to bed.
Okay.
But let's face it, it was one-way traffic for the last 10 minutes.
Adrian certainly made up for his initial error. Because
he did drop it one time as well. A soft header came in and he dropped it.
There was clumsy goalkeeping, but essentially effective.
He's got cold hands and cold head as well.
Yeah. But I mean, the thing is that this is, we're going to talk about Graham Potter here, and he's got this mentioned that he says, win, lose, or draw, we'll learn something. And basically, the players would have gone into that game. They've come out of it. Right, we just pushed the champions-elect all the way here. We've had the Anfield faithful who are used to seeing flowing football. And
well, them, the teams parking the bus,
hashtag,
frankly, yeah.
Like thrashing teams like Brighton.
Well, can I just point out, last week on the show, we had Neil from the Anfield Wrap. And I spoke to him after the game, and he was mightily relieved at the final whistle. He wasn't surprised by what he saw from Brighton's play, and he wasn't particularly impressed by Liverpool. But you know, those are the marks of the potential champions. But he was mightily impressed with what Brighton were doing. I think a lot of fans are coming away from it. You know, instead of hashtag small teams like Brighton, it's actually there's some good football here.
Yeah, and we're
winning friends again.
And it's still a work in progress. I mean, Andy, we haven't asked you the question. I mean, were you surprised when Graham Potter got the contract extension?
No.
No.
We're coming up to sacking season.
And it's in full flow, actually, isn't it?
Yeah, we're coming up to sacking season, and it's inevitable that there will be there will be teams with deeper pockets than ours.
Mm-hmm. Especially when they say the way that Potter's got his team playing.
And Potter's probably going to be a hot property. So, yeah, that was a preemptive strike. I think we've seen enough from Potter already to realise that this is the direction in which we want to go. So we're all in and we're going to commit to it.
Absolutely.
So hopefully stick with it, whatever happens this season.
Yeah.
Because it is the way forward. And, it's part of a plan. I think it's all about cementing that plan and just making sure that no one's going to get distracted by anything else.
But it helps with this with the pathway that's opened up. And not only are the two players that have actually like followed that path, made their first team debuts and actually stayed in the team, they've actually both gone on to get full international caps. It's amazing.
That's pretty weird, actually, isn't it? Yeah, they've gone from nothing to everything in no time at all. And good for them.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But, I mean, that's possibly just kind of the high status internationally that the Premier League has. Once you're playing, then you think, well, hang on, why aren't they playing in our national side?
Okay, well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. We are brought to you in association with the fabulous oldfootballshirts.com.
Hello, Phil.
And our friend Phil Shelley has given us a wonderful shirt. Well, I'm not sure whether I like it or not.
Is it wonderful or not?
It's one of Phil's.
It's a rugby shirt.
I wouldn't say wonderful. It's all right. It's basically blue and white hoops.
Yeah.
Sunweb Vliet Griesen. So is this maybe some sort of Dutch?
Yes, it
shot?
Is Dutch.
Okay. I'm going to guess actually because I see blue and white, I'm going to guess Blauw-Wit, the team that Kuiper started.
No, they wear stripes.
Do they?
Yeah.
All right. So why have we got a rugby? Well, I mean, this basic. We're looking at a Reading shirt, obviously from the Netherlands, but we're looking at a Reading shirt. Well,
that's here, or QPR.
Yeah. I'd say more Reading than QPR.
Yeah,
though.
Absolutely.
The hoops are thinner.
Right. Put us out of our
misery
then.
And the white sash down the side and down the sides there as well. Okay. So this is your shirt of the week for this week, and this is from Phil Shelley's oldfootballshirts.com. You can go on there, have a look at a plethora of old football shirts.
A plethora. There's 100,000 on there.
100,000 shirts on oldfootballshirts.com. You can go on there, have, like I said. There's a brilliant catalogue of Brighton shirts on there as well. And
come to that presently.
All sorts of rarities on there. But this is your shirt of the week, and it's chosen because, well, I quite like it, says Phil. And somebody gave it to me a while back, he says.
Go on then.
It's a match-worn shirt of Dutch side De Graafschap. And it's a 2005 to 2006 home shirt. De Graafschap hail from the city of Doetinchem, which is towards the German border.
He's making this up now.
About halfway up on the right-hand side.
What's the name of this
Holland.
Dutch town?
Doetinchem.
I really would laugh if it was something completely different.
Well, they play in the Eerste Divisie, which is the second tier of Dutch football. And their name is a Dutch word for the county, and they are nicknamed the Superburden, which translates to be the super farmers.
Brilliant.
We're doing well
here. Their home is the 12,600 capacity Stadion de Vigeburg, and the stadium is voted as the most atmospheric stadium in the Eredivisie last season, although they got relegated, which is why they're in the Eerste this year. The current squad is almost exclusively made up of Dutch players, and the only exception being midfielder Gregor Breinberg, who comes from Aruba, which is a Caribbean island.
It's a Dutch Caribbean island as well.
Which is a constituent country of the Netherlands. There's not a lot to link the super farmers with England. Israeli
maybe they're twin with
ben
the tractor
Zahar
boys, you never know.
A handful of times with Chelsea, QPR, Sheffield Wednesday and Pompey before moving on to play 20 times for Graafschap in 2009. Another striker, Luc de Jong, began his career with him before a brief spell at Newcastle in 2014. He now plays for Sevilla. The most famous person I can find connected with de Graafschap is Frans Tyson, who had a brief spell as manager in 1999, and he's now found himself working in football in Australia. Frans Tyson was a good player, wasn't he?
He was. I tell you what, our good friends Werner and Lido are going to be listening to that, and they're going to be shaking their heads and maybe even weeping at that.
I hope so.
I hope so.
I really hope so.
Yeah. Because you cannot make grown men cry like that. It's not fair.
I can. Well, okay. Well, so as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, we have a competition for you this week. And we've teamed up with our friends at The Art of Football. Art of Football, I don't know if you guys have seen their website and the stuff they do. We've had a competition with their stuff before where
they did the Anthony Knockhart shirt, didn't they?
The Anthony Knockhart shirt. But they've got all sorts of stuff going on there. They've just released an Albion Classics print, and which is also available as a T-shirt. Now,
which basically, you had a big say in, didn't you?
It kind of went well. I don't know who advised them, but for some reason, there's 9 Albion Classic shirts on there.
And one, well, it was 8 Classics and 1 and Minger.
For some reason, they're advised to put a training shirt on there, which kind of went a little bit.
It was kind of like a Blue Chewits one, wasn't it?
And people generally loved it, but I couldn't quite work out why we had a training shirt on there. And we spoke to the guys at Art of Football, and they said, yeah, that's probably not quite right.
No.
I mean, these things are all hand-drawn on a single bit of paper, so it's kind of...
The thing is, if you was to ask any Albion fan, you know, your favourite, even 5 shirts, let alone 9 shirts, you'd be hard pressed to actually come up with one particular favourite. I mean, everyone will have their particular favourite for a given reason. You know, whether it's a 21st century shirt, whether it's the one that was first at Withdean, whether it was the last one at Withdean, whether it's your classic Peter Ward shirt, whatever it is, it's actually quite tricky to do that. So I think they've come up with 9 fairly representative ones from the Albion's history.
Yeah. So obviously you can go, we're posting this across all of our social media where you can actually have a look at it. And we're giving you the opportunity to win one of these. It's available as either a print or a T-shirt.
Was it a T-shirt as well?
Which is of your choice. We've got 2 of these to give away.
Fantastic.
And so basically the question for this one is, who was the kit manufacturer of our 96-97 home shirt as worn in the last game at the Goldstone and at Hereford? That is, who was the kit manufacturer of our 1996-1997 home shirt as worn in the last game at the Goldstone and at Hereford?
So if you think you know the answer, drop us an email to thealbionraw@yahoo.co.uk. Stick your answer on there and your name. And if you happen to be one of the 2 correct winners from the correct answers, we'll let you know. Certainly, hopefully be arriving with you before Christmas. So yeah, it's thealbionraw@yahoo.co.uk. Put your answer down there. One more time, the question, AD, is?
The question is, who was the kit manufacturer of our 1996-97 home shirt as worn in the last game at the Goldstone and also at Hereford?
Okay, drop us a line if you think you know. Send us an email and good luck.
And we also recommend that you also go and have a look at the stuff that these guys do at Art of Football. Their stuff is absolutely wonderful.
Absolutely. There's some very good stuff there, except the Palace stuff, which build a bonfire for that one.
But so. it's very eclectic. I mean, basically, the majority of the on their blurb, they said, the majority of football T-shirts I see these days are just generic, crudely screen-printed image or something like Luis Suarez's big, ugly grin.
It is an ugly grin, it must be said.
So we decided to do something completely different.
They're very nice. They are very good. And like I said, the knockout one, of course, is very nice indeed. So, yeah, so who was the kit manufacturer in our last season at the Goldstone? Send your answer to thealbionraw@yahoo.co.uk and we will draw the winners. Next Friday the 13th, and let you know next week. Yeah,
absolutely.
Good luck.
Okay, so on Thursday night we had a trip to North London, Andy, and it all went rather well.
Yes, it certainly did. It was it was weird before the game. I was thinking, you know, this is our best opportunity to get a positive result at the Emirates because Arsenal.
What made you think that?
They hadn't won a game for 8 games. I mean, you know, they're genuinely not that. They're generally not that great at the moment.
And
there's no reason why we should build them up to some kind of sort of mythical, you know, godlike status. It was just like, you know, we were just playing a fairly run-of-the-mill mid-table football side, but they are part of the perceived Big Six. It is a great stadium, even though it's very, very quiet. Although it was actually a little bit louder than normal, which is surprising because there was less people there than I think I've ever seen.
One of the things that happens is that, you know, they've offloaded their manager, and there's often a bounce from that sort of thing, isn't there?
Yeah, and also, given how we played in the second half against Liverpool, you know, we had a good quality half of football where we weren't cowed by being two goals down. We took it to, you know, took it to the title chasers, and you know, as you said to me earlier in the week, so if we play like that on Thursday, we'll win. And I was thinking, you know what, we are genuinely good enough to get a result here. And this is the classic football fan thing. This is always when you think we're going to totally mess it up, and we're going to be the one team that fight. We're going to be the play themselves right team.
Well, but traditionally, actually, that's what we have been. Any team that's on the poor run of form, they're just looking forward to playing against Brighton usually.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, not anymore.
No.
Well, there's been a couple of times this season where we're looking at that and you think, oh, we fancy this. Spurs were on a poor run. Arsenal were poor. Hey, if you want to offload your manager, then just play us and lose. But, you know, we turned up at Man U and didn't turn up. And Chelsea, we weren't. I know you're saying, about, oh, we played okay, but let's face it, we were never going to win. So it's about time we did this. Now, in the round, in the, you know, we'll talk about the specifics in a minute, but to your mind, was it we played well or Arsenal were dreadful or a mix of the two?
It was both. I mean, we did play well, and because they didn't play well, we were able to make the most of it. I mean, that was what was so refreshing about, you know, not just going into like specific incidents, but it's the character that we showed in that game was like, regardless of what was happening, we just looked like we thought we were going to win.
Well, what I've got written down here is the fact that, like, we started with a hunger and an intensity about our play, and we were first into tackles, we were winning second balls, and Arsenal just couldn't live with us at times.
It was absolutely amazing. We were doing to Arsenal what I think kind of what Chelsea were doing to us in the game at Stamford Bridge was like, we got that early press on. It's like in the first 5 or 6 minutes, we got that early press on. They had a couple of chances, you know, like right in the first couple of minutes. But basically, we were pressuring them back. We weren't giving them space on the ball. They didn't really like it. I mean, you know, Connolly and Morpay were just like up their backsides the whole time.
A couple of speedy Gonzales.
And they were a nuisance, is basically.
They were absolutely a nuisance. And when we didn't have the ball, we made sure that they didn't enjoy their possession. It was really very impressive.
One thing that I picked up on this on the weekend with Arsenal's performance at Norwich, where their midfield was just, you could drive a bus for it, and it was exactly the same. It was non-existent, and it was like
as a bad fan, I was catching up on all the live things, and just about everyone was pointing out, you know, Arsenal's midfield were just not helping their defenders. Their defenders were looking, you know, sorry and overrun. And the midfield were just like, well, you know, we'll turn up and just do something.
But the one person that the rear was taking advantage of this was Aaron Moy. He was just absolutely magnificent all game.
He was absolutely tremendous. He totally bossed the game. He was quick. He was strong. Very, very physical. You know, I mean, he wasn't taking no for an answer. I mean, he was getting that ball. His delivery was very good. He had some good shooting opportunities, but he covered every blade of grass. I mean, I think it was one time he was like defending on the left, and then the next time you saw him, he's right over on the right, crossing the ball in.
I was just about to ask you what role, you know. I mean, I know that we sometimes struggle these days with this sort of kind of bizarre sometimes setup that Potter will have. Not bizarre, but you know, when we're expecting a 4-5-1 or a 4-4-2, whatever it is, you go in there, you know, you're looking at the whole thing from the West Stand up, and you think, nope, no idea what he's up to, but it looks good. So what role did it look like Moy was supposed to be playing?
Well, I think he was nominally sort of on the, yeah, I don't know. I mean, he was kind of
floating all over. I mean, he was predominantly playing on the left, but he was given license to roam.
And I think he was like the hired muscle to sort of like intervene where necessary.
Right.
But I mean,
was it a midfield three?
Yeah.
Yeah. But he was there. He was there providing the turnovers. He was there picking up the loose balls.
Yeah.
We were first at every second ball. Yeah. Arsenal just good. They were just so poor.
Was he on the same? He was on the same side as Aubameyang mostly, wasn't he?
Well, yeah, we're going to talk about him in a minute.
Okay.
But it's, but I mean, the Aaron Moy, it's taken him a while for his Albion career to really get started. I mean, he had one good game, then he got sent off. But it's been a bit of a slow burner. But the last couple of games, he's really, really coming into his own a bit, isn't he?
Well, you know, we obviously watched him quite a lot when he played for Huddersfield, and we all saw what an excellent player he was for them. And so when we signed him, you know, we thought, oh, this is just the kind of like steel and, you know, mobility that we want in the midfield. And he did have an underwhelming start, but it's clear that he's been working very hard in training. It's clear that the staff have confidence in him, and he now has confidence in himself. Yeah, I don't know whether he was a little bit ring rusty over the summer. But now he's up to speed. He looks indispensable.
The thing is, I think you're being a little bit harsh there, AD. I mean, yeah, he didn't make the sort of the most auspicious of starts, and he was breaking himself in gently. But you say he had one good game, and then that was it. And I think he's had a fair few good games.
No, he had one good game until he got sent. Then he got sent off.
No, what I'm saying is,
he's come back. He didn't come straight back in again.
No, but what I'm saying is, I think he had two or three decent games before he was sent off. I mean, the sending off was stupid.
I wouldn't say he had decent games; he had decent moments.
No, I thought there was a couple of times. I mean, there were certain games when I'm thinking he was my man of the match, or he was in line for it. So I think just to say one, I think is a little bit harsh. Yes, since he's come back, he's looked pretty decent, absolutely. And there's been times when, you know. I think when he plays poorly, everyone seems to play poorly, which is slightly disconcerting. But, you know,
I think
as you said, every time we saw Huddersfield, we were playing against Huddersfield, it was always Aaron Moy plus 10, wasn't it?
Yeah. But yeah. I think that's the nature of the position. I think if any of your midfielders play poorly, and then basically you're just letting the opponents like attack at will, and so it does make everybody else look bad.
But I mean, but with Aaron Moy playing like this, we're beginning to see the real Davy Prepper, the one which we actually saw, and the one that actually plays for Hull. We're actually starting to see him, and a part of that is actually to do with the very anonymous role that Dale Stevens is playing, and he is just doing that so well. It was absolutely.
What do you mean anonymous?
Basically, he does all of the dirty work that nobody sees.
Yeah.
Well, he's been doing that for 4 years.
Well, I know, but he's actually doing it.
He's doing it that everyone is noticing now.
Yeah, let's go there.
Well, no,
I've been screaming it for the last 4 years.
Like, I think Stevens has become more invisible, apart from like the one or two occasions he does give the ball away ridiculously badly.
Is what people only notice, isn't it? I think it's unfair.
There was one at the end when we were like trying to run time out, and he just like basically kicks it straight back to Leno, which is like ridiculous.
Yeah.
But the thing is that he's now because Moy brings that muscular style of play to the midfield as well. It means that Prepper now is kind of free, and the roles seem to be better defined. It's like, you know, Moy and Prepper can go forward, and like Stevens is the rock. He's the one mopping everything up at the back, and providing the sort of platform for them to work off. And it's really nice.
But
I mean,
Stevens, though, he's still putting in some pingers. I mean, that there was that one ball we put in for Aaron Connolly where it could have been a penalty. It was on the line. I think the ref got that one right in the end. But
it was a very good decision by the referee. But yeah. There you go, I said it.
No. And this is against Arthur. Well, you can say it when you win, can't you?
I thought the referee was pretty good, actually.
Yeah, we've got him again on Sunday, I think. So.
All right. Now, the thing is, Moy does allow Prepper to do that, but then so does Alzati. I mean, those are the two probably the players who are competing.
Alzati was playing as a wing back. So. Yeah.
No, but sorry, when there has been a midfield three of Alzati, Stevens, and Prepper before, and then Alzati's been moved to a wing back when we've gone to a. You know, it's so flexible. I mean, it's that Alzati can do so many things in so many positions. It's great having him about. I mean, and also I think also he's cut out his diving, which was very, very welcome. It's Moy has allowed him to do it, but then Alzati's role doing something similar was like that. But it's just Prepper is being told to do something else anyway. Forget the defensive stuff. I mean, for me, he was our outfield player by a distance at Anfield. I thought he was absolutely brilliant. In fact, probably better than most of Liverpool players. Prepper is for me the man of the moment. Obviously, I didn't see Aaron Moy playing against Arsenal, a bad fan. But, you know, it's great. I just can't help feeling that is the Wolves game going to be after the Lord Mayor's show? I mean, you know, supporting the Albion for 40 years, you know that's going to happen, don't you? sorry, but you know, don't bother turning
don't
up
worry,
on
lad,
Sunday.
We've got this.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you probably won't be the only one thinking that. Yeah, exactly. You're probably in good company there.
But this, you know,
Potter's got to go. Yeah,
I'm pretty confident actually. But
the players you'd like to think will be up and confident.
I was actually trying to look up the odds on the odds on Davey Proper to score any time on Sunday, because he's getting closer and closer. Mm. One of these is going to fly in the top corner at some point, and I will be delighted.
Nah, he's going to shin it in from 6 inches, isn't he?
Oh, don't forget that I nominated before a ball was kicked this season as Davey Proper to be player of the season this year, so he needs to start scoring more goals.
Well, I think that's unfair. I think for me he has been if it was right now, I think he would be in contention. I'd still go for Matty Ryan because he's kept us in so many games. But I certainly wouldn't have a problem with Proper.
He's in the conversation,
and he's certainly in the positive.
Yeah, we'll have that conversation at the end of the season. Yes. Yeah, sure. We did take the lead, and it was from a set piece, which Arsenal have been particularly rubbish on.
And so it proved.
It was Adam Webster who swept in his second of the season from Gross's corner. Now, Aaron Connolly's attempt to try and get this in was quite comical, but it was...
What did he do? He just lost his balance a little bit, didn't he?
Shot, really. But,
He chested it down, but it just didn't go to where his feet were. but what was really funny, I didn't notice this until I watched it for about the eighth time, was the clueless turning of the head of David Luiz, who...
He was our man of the match,
He had no idea where the ball was. And because, Connolly's there, and he was just like... Yeah. So For the benefit of anyone watching. I'm just waving my head around,
The Kevin Keegan thing going,
But it was just a presence of mind from Webster. He struck it very cleanly through the gap, and... excellent. And I thought Webster actually had a pretty good game. I think there was maybe one little sort of defensive slip. But aside from that, he was excellent.
Well, Al mentioned Matty Ryan there, and we needed him again. And it was a fantastic save from Willock, wasn't it?
Great name.
Yes.
How much he suffered at school.
Yeah, he was. No, I mean, Matty Ryan made a couple of blinding saves in that game. I think the one in the second half was just incredible, because he was literally diving straight into where the goalpost was. He put his head on the line there and still went to make the save. But yeah, it was an excellent game from Ryan. But he just had total confidence in him. I mean, I just didn't feel worried in that game at all, really.
Really?
Well, it's funny, it's just that...
But they did score, though.
Because this is the thing, and basically... It's still Arsenal. They have still got world class players. They are more of a collection of individuals rather than a team. But they did turn up at the beginning of the second half.
They certainly did.
They made one change. They brought on Nicola Pepe, and he made a bit of a difference.
He just made them go faster. I mean, they were very leaden footed in the first half, which is why it was quite easy for us to contain them. And then they'd obviously had a rocket at half time, and they came out and they actually looked like Arsenal for 15 minutes.
That we showed at the beginning of the first half, they were showing there, and they did. They had us rocking for a little while, and they did score. I was wondering whether VAR was going to intervene with this one. They certainly looked at it.
Well, it did intervene, but
yeah, but it was a clean goal.
Yeah,
sadly, no complaints.
But how close was he then to actually getting some contact? Because are we talking about a not dissimilar situation between, and you mentioned it earlier, Bissouma nearly not going for the ball that Lewis Dunk ultimately scuffed at Anfield? You know, how much interference was there from him? Was it Kolasinac?
I think
he was trying to head it in.
I think people were thinking, did it touch Kolasinac's arm on the way in? But it didn't actually touch him at all.
Mm.
So that would have been the only reason to have disallowed.
Grudgingly, you agree it's a goal.
But was it obstructing the players that were trying to get to the ball, i.e. Matty Ryan and Lewis Dunk?
No, I don't think so. Well, it was a goal. It was a frustrating one to concede, but it was perfectly legitimate.
Okay, but then they did have the ball in the net for second sign. It was David Luiz. Now this is where the VAR intervention comes in. How did it even get that far?
There were five players offside. How did the lino, who's literally 15 yards away from it, not see it?
Did he not flag?
No.
So this is the conversation, because we've seen this in other games, particularly, well, this week, really.
Yeah.
And the weekend, particularly the Leicester game against Everton, with their last minute winner, where the flag did go up, but they played on, and Leicester, Iheanacho wasn't offside, and then you saw the game against the Sheffield United game this week, last night even, where the flag went up and they all stopped, and the Newcastle player goes on to put the ball in the back of the net.
Well, you play to the whistle. I mean, you just played to the whistle.
But this is the same game, and sorry, you're either going to put your flag up or you're not.
Well, hang on.
I'd like to know what the directive is on that, and why don't the players and managers know? I mean, I would have thought if the flag goes up, you stop. That would be my gut. You play to the whistle.
Because the referee's thinking, well, I'm not 100% sure about that, and I want to see how this plays out. And that's actually sort of possibly forward thinking by the referee. If it's that tight, yeah, the flag's gone up. The linesman's convinced he's right. He's sure in his decision, and up it goes. The fact he's wrong, it's human error, but the fact he's wrong can be looked at. Yeah. If you're talking about another team that stopped because the flag went up, more for them.
Well, yeah, you're right, because that was a borderline decision, but the flag did go up.
Did the whistle go?
This one was not a borderline decision, and the flag didn't go up.
No, it was bizarre. I mean, surely the fact that David Luiz scored the goal should always be immediate grounds for suspicion. There's got to be something wrong with this goal.
Absolutely, yeah.
But what was interesting about that goal, it was quite funny, was Adam Webster just got the ball, picked the ball up immediately, and took it back to the 6-yard line. He was no doubt in his mind that goal was going to be disallowed.
Yeah. But that was pretty much the point where Arsenal just ran out of puff and ideas, and we started to like pressure again. We started passing through them again. We got our movement going again.
Okay, was it Arsenal stopped or we started?
No, I mean we.
Well, we never stopped.
We absorbed the pressure. Because you know Arsenal got off to a whirlwind start that second half, and they were the dominant team certainly for like the opening 15-20 minutes of it, I would say, and we took the punches, but then we played ourselves back into the game, and then that seemed to sap the Arsenal team's confidence, and then obviously we move on to the magic moment.
Yeah. Well, just before we get to that, did you notice that Aubameyang was off the pitch?
No.
No.
Our good friend Vicky, that when he came back on the pitch, that was the first time she noticed him actually being on the pitch. I thought he came on as a sub. No, he's been on there the whole time.
Yeah, apart from when he had to go to the delayed toilet. Entrance, yeah.
It was just bizarre. I think maybe he had a touch of Deli Belly
He went off for a comfort break. Yes, yeah. I believe they referred to.
But we did make it two. It was just a wicked ball in. I mean, we were giving full credit to Trent Alexander-Arnold's delivery there, but Aaron Moy's delivery for Morpé there. I mean, Morpé still had a lot to do, but the ball helped.
Absolute peach. Absolute peach of a ball in from Moy. And Morpé, I was absolutely delighted for him. He worked really hard. I think, he's struggled to convert. His conversion rate's not been that great. It's certainly not going to be as good as he would have hoped.
He did say in his interview after the game that he said he has been struggling with his confidence a little bit of late. So,
well, does he actually point out that he's got another centre forward playing alongside him as well? Because those two are still not firing.
Well, there was a classic example where that went wrong. But
exactly. I mean, it's still happening. They've got to sort that out. I mean, it will help our goals ratio if they can just look up and see that maybe the other fella's in a better position. They've still got to sort that.
I mean, that's something that Aaron needs to do. He just needs to lift his head up again.
Yeah, it does. It's a work in progress.
Yeah, sure. But it was a brilliant header. He guided it wonderfully.
Yeah, fantastic. Keeper had no chance.
And then Trossard should have made it three. A goal made by himself.
Yeah, I mean...
An attempt, not a goal.
I mean, it's weird. I mean, there's always this clamour for Trossard to play because he's so much fun to watch. But I think he's really carving out a super sub niche for himself at the moment, because the last thing Arsenal wanted to see in that last 10 minutes was him come on, because they were ragged already. They were already tired, I think, yeah, mentally and physically, and yeah, he just came on and
tough.
Well, it was another 3 points to the total. Well, first we're in one of the so-called top six, and you know that will breed confidence, and they're going into the season because the confidence that they got from that the performance at Liverpool showed that they could do it, and then they've actually gone out and they've actually done it. So hopefully we can continue that throughout the season.
They've set the bar now, and yeah, and Potter's going to say, "Well, look, I've seen you do it. I'll do it again.
Do it again, yeah."
And he'll keep saying that every week.
Okay, well let's move on then. Last week we started talking about our team of the decade, and we came to the decision that Matt Ryan was our goalkeeper of choice.
I think so, yeah. And quickly, Andy, would you go with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, fine.
Okay, so now we need to make a case for our defence.
Right. Okay.
So now what we're doing is
we're
not talking about the. Basically, we can go for whoever the best players are. We know who everyone knows who they are. They're the ones that have been playing for us in the Premier League, or someone like Wayne Bridge, who's been there, done it, got the T-shirt. Yeah. But I mean, just to go back, the first game of the decade, which was that game at Torquay.
Right.
In our defence that day was Jim McNulty.
Right.
James Tunnicliffe. One Adam Virgo and Gavin Hoyt. Now that's a defence that set the pulses running, isn't it?
Not really.
Another one of our
Andy Wing and
rubbish,
Tommy Elphick
lonely.
Were.
Yes.
But that was a cup game. The first league game of the decade. The defence was Elphick, Virgo, Calderon, and Painter. Can you tell me who that was against?
No. No.
Southend?
It was away. It was in January at Walsall. 1-2-1. Right. Two cracking goals from a certain Glenn Murray and Nicky Forster.
Yeah, was that Nicky Forster? It's kind of an overhead kick.
I like Marcus Painter, actually.
Yeah, I
thought he was
happy.
a really solid fullback.
So far this decade.
Yes.
Obviously we've got a couple of weeks to go yet, but so far this decade we've had 51 defenders put on a Brighton shirt. Some of which
were loanees, I'm sure.
And yeah, some of which I've completely forgotten about, and there's a reason for that.
Because they were rubbish. Okay, who are the ones for you that you forgot about? Start at the bottom. I think you're going to go to the bottom of the list here, aren't you?
Well, there was Greg Halford.
No, I don't remember the big throw-in.
Joe Bennett.
Yeah.
I remember him.
Adam Chickson.
Well, these are people we haven't forgotten, mate.
No.
Aaron Hughes.
Yeah.
Vitaly Maximenko.
So I still remember these people.
Was he a defender?
Yeah.
Nominally.
Yeah. Glenn Ray played once.
Yeah.
We had Grant Hall, Benson Pio, Gonzalo Jarro Reyes, Joe Mattock.
Mattock,
him,
I remember
him. Of the men's grooming incident.
Okay, so are we picking our back four here now?
Is that Liam Ridgewell? I've forgotten about him.
Are we picking our back four here now?
Yeah, so I mean, the best ones, I mean, we're obviously Lewis Dunk is the one. He scored the most goals, made the most appearances for us this decade. He's a shoo-in.
Yeah.
You've got Gordon Greer, I think. Can we make a case for Gordon Greer?
We can make a case for it, but I think it's not particularly watertight.
He would be on the bench.
Yes. Shouting for his captain's
but
old
he's,
band back.
I wouldn't. I got someone else ahead of him in that position. But yeah, Greer's certainly worth mentioning
in this
discussion because he was a good player for us.
As was Tommy Elphick.
He was. Tommy was a good player for us.
Okay, so who's the person you got
Tirico,
ahead of? Who have you got him? You're not going through the entire list. Not
Pop,
the
no,
51. Please don't. Who's ahead of Gordon Greer on your list then?
Shane Duffy.
They are one and the same, aren't they?
Yeah.
The Dunk to my Duffy.
Dunk and Duffy.
Yeah.
So they come as a pair.
Yeah. So
So what about you then? Who's your centre-back pairing then, AD?
I mean, you can't really look past Dunk and Duffy, really. I mean, I've got a lot of time for Gordon Greer, and, you know...
Yeah, me too.
I've got a line for a lot of... Adam Alabd as well.
Yeah.
Adam Alabd, of course, he's on the list. Then, of course, you've got to look at the fullbacks as well. I mean, Bruno... will probably...
Bruno, it's... Bruno or Calde?
Then the Calde, you know.
You know full well that Bruno was better. Sorry, Calde, but you know full well that Bruno was better. But, dear God, I mean, when you look at that triumvirate of Calde, Bruno and Liam Rossignol as the nicest ambassadors, the loveliest people, all vying at the same time at the same club for the same position in the same team. That says something. I mean, there's something otherworldly about that.
Also, I just actually just come across another name in the centre. He actually won Player of the Season as well, which is one we haven't talked about, which is Matt Upson.
Upson, I probably have in there. I think that sometimes you go with the players that you think are kind of ours, you know.
Yeah.
And Upson was Stephen Ward was on loan as well, wasn't he? So
Ward was a good fullback.
Okay, so who's your right back of choice? Is it Bruno?
Yeah.
Right, now, whenever anyone comes up with their 11, okay, when you're talking about a ginger 11 or a beard 11 or a baldy 11 or whatever it is you're going to come up with, everyone struggles with a left back. So, guns ahead, Mr. Bass. Who is your left back of the decade?
Wayne Bridge.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, I did feel odd saying that because he wasn't really our player.
He was our player.
He was on loan for half a season, wasn't he?
Yeah. And then we had him like for a year or something. Yeah, well, yeah, Wayne Bridge. I mean, he was just a brilliant player.
So I think Rob Hunt.
Not quite on the same level.
Not as such. Please don't mention all 51. I think we're kind of agreed here. I mean, it's not a particularly imaginative defensive line, but we are talking about Bridge, Dunk, Duffy and Bruno, aren't we, as the back four?
And that's solid and creative.
Yes. Well, not the creative bit with Duffy, but, you know, yes.
No, but the fullbacks are creative and the middle two are brick walls.
They scare the bejesus out of the midfield in front of them, certainly. Yeah. And yeah, you do have to consider the fact of the level they've played at. And all four have played, obviously, at the highest level.
But I think when you're looking back at the deco and you look at the likes of Elphick, Elabd, Greer.
Brilliant servants.
Absolutely fantastic players that were great fun to watch. And you're really glad that they're at our team. And, you know, whilst they're not at the level of the players that we've put in,
but you could say exactly the same about Gates and Bong.
Well, anyone who's actually been part of a successful side, it's just that because we're now in the top division, you can tell there's a quality about them. You know, the back four that we had when we won promotion from the old third division in the last season at Withdean, even the back four, which actually we just picked three of them, that got promoted.
Yeah.
You know, those are the qualities, those are the things you're looking at. But now, it's interesting we can't pick a left-back from our current Premier League side to beat anyone Wayne
Bernardo
Bridge.
Bernardo would be...
If you took Wayne Bridge out, because he is head and shoulders above that, okay, you go for Gates and Bong as your best left-back.
Marcus Painter?
Well,
you know what, now you mentioned Marcus Painter, we did...
He never let us down.
We did pretty well with him in the team.
And he did look like John Terry.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't shout too loud.
Yeah, I mean, I liked Marcus Painter, and I think it was the guy we had, Richards.
The decade before,
we had Matt Richards in that position.
But if we're going to have a conversation about which defender scored the best goal, it's got to be Pocanoli, isn't it?
Yeah.
The best goal, probably, yeah. Sorry, my left back of choice, by the way, is Stephen Ward. Sorry.
Marcus Huttner.
No, it's Stephen Ward.
Stephen Ward.
Stop throwing in names. It's really irritating. Stop it.
Ben Barkley.
Stephen Ward, we should have signed.
And
us not signing him was extremely costly, I thought.
I think so.
When we let him go to Burnley.
Yeah.
Because
he was part of a very solid defensive unit.
He was very, very good.
Okay. Well, I mean, this is a debate which we could have long and hard, but I mean, let us know your choices.
Okay, by the way, did you say, hang on, you said the goal of the defender.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to throw in Balogun's against Palace.
Yeah, good choice. Plenty of Shane Duffy ones there to choose from. But let us know. Go to all our social media, our Twitter, our Facebook. Don't forget there's a competition to win an Art of Football print or T-shirt. Al, what's the question again?
Who was the kit manufacturer in our last season at the Goldstone? Send your answer to the Albion Raw at yahoo.co.uk. Ada, your phone is twinking, which means you've got to get the beers in. Sorry about that. It's the law. And yes, please send and good luck with that. And you know, all things being well, we'll send that out to you hopefully before Christmas.
And with that timer, that means it is quite literally all we've got time for. So thank you to Andy Bass, thank you to Alan Wares. I've been AD Packham. This has been the Albion Raw. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week, and hopefully we'll be giving you who won the competition. See you then. Thanks a lot. Bye. Thank you.